Welcome to the Career Conversations podcast, brought to you by Hunter Recruitment Group. Today we have an amazing guest. His name is Trent Williams. Trent is potentially one of the most humble humans I've ever met in my life. He's also the 2023 New South Wales Nurse of the Year. He's an amazing person, an amazing dad, and in our career conversation there is a fantastic story about his dad and what his dad did for him to commence his career. He's an individual that I've met through his support of our community and a shared passion for basketball and coaching. But what strikes me the most with Trent is throughout this conversation, you really get a feel for who he is. And it's all about gratitude. It's all about sharing his story and success with others. And I think that kindness and the way that Trent lives his life is an example for all of us to follow. So it's an amazing career conversations chat with an individual that's had such a fulfilling career so far within the nursing profession. So hopefully you'll enjoy this conversation as much as I had recording it with Trent. So without further ado, Trent Williams, 2023 New South Wales Nurse of the Year. Welcome to the Career Conversations podcast, Trent Williams.
Great to be here, Craig. It's a real honour and really flattered to be asked.
Yeah, nice. So I wanted to start off, what tipped me to really want to have this conversation with you was this award that you've won recently. So you co-won the award, is that right? A New South Wales Nurse of the Year. Tell me about that.
So it was, yeah. So I was co-awarded the New South Wales Nurse of the Year with a wonderful guy. His name's John. So he's a HIV nurse who started HIV clinics in St. Vincent's. So he had this vision was to starting these clinics in 1990, and at that stage when you were diagnosed with HIV, it was
a death sentence.
Yeah, and now, 30 years on, he gives one pill to a person newly diagnosed with HIV, and then they live a normal life.
That's amazing.
So to be with him and be awarded with him was a real honour, and it's still overwhelming. It's still an amazing honour. I'm so grateful. I'm so humbled by it. And I was actually coaching basketball when I found out I was nominated, and the first thing I did was just went home and sent an email to people who impacted on my life and just said, thank you so much for what you've did. I'm here because of you. And fast forward a couple of months and I'm sitting in Parliament House waiting to go in. And I was just sitting on these, beautiful leather lounges in Parliament House. And I thought, oh my God, how has this happened? And it just made me realise it's on the back of these amazing people that have influenced my life, and there's been pivotal moments in my career that could have gone good or bad, but through the mentorship of people who are far more talented and capable than me, I managed to turn that in and to something positive. And when I'm sitting there waiting, and my wife came down with me, and it was a great night. And then you get told that you're the co-nurse of the year with a remarkable guy, and and to have that award, I still can't believe it.
It's pretty amazing, and you've just described winning the award, and we didn't hear a word about what you did to win the award. You were giving praise to everyone else. Tell us why you won the award.
I still think I've won it under false pretenses, but I think it's been a 20-year apprenticeship, to be honest, Craig. There's been a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into that career, and So I've been doing lots of clinical work, and I was lucky enough to finish a PhD and became involved in looking at systems and why things go wrong in hospitals, and did lots of clinical work during that time, lots of leadership and mentorship, and eventually it just sort of, I finished my PhD and then... a really wonderful guy called Professor Aaron Sverdlov. He started a cancer in the heart program in Newcastle. So he not only does scientific tests, but he also does clinical work. And like most good ideas in hospitals, they started over a coffee shop. And he said, I really like the way you go about things. Why don't you come and work with me. And so I put in a really large grant to get what's called a fellowship. So it's devoted clinical time to do some clinical and research mentorship. So I was fortunate enough or lucky enough to receive that, and we started Australia's first ever cancer in the heart clinic. And that,
here in the Hunter?
Here in Newcastle, yeah. And since that time, because it was so successful, we've had research funding, you know, awarded to us to expand that. So people who get diagnosed with cancer have this point of care as a routine. And I think, you know, I had this great time, and I had to be filmed giving an interview for the time. And what they did, they read out my nomination form that a group of, I think, 6 or 7 people wrote for me. And the stuff that they wrote about me was just beautiful, you know, and you don't appreciate that. And when someone sort of writes that down, you're thinking, wow, that's really lovely. And
nice,
I think
that people think that of you.
It was. And you know, it's been a hard process because I'm a card-carrying member of the Introverts Club, Craig. So all the attention has been really hard. But I think it's been really nice because it's been able to pause and reflect and think, you know what, this is an unbelievable honour and reflective of not just 1 year but 20 years of probably working 7 days a week, to be honest, in one way or another, and putting my hand up for volunteer projects and mentoring people and giving talks and all of that stuff. So to be, you know, given that, you know, for something that I've, you know, poured heart and soul into was amazing.
So before we jump into your career, that fellowship that you got the grant for,
yeah,
was it a real passion project? Was it was it different to what you'd been doing or similar? Or was it, oh man, that project, I love that, I want to be a part of that, and I'll jump hoops to get there?
It was. So yeah, it was a grant. So you had to write a grant, a really large grant. I think it was probably 20 or 25 pages or something like that, and it gets put to a panel. So, you know, with under the mentorship of Aaron and his research partner and wife, who's a professor as well, Duane No, they really mentored me in this grant process, and I learnt a lot. And it was a large grant. Then it was in the middle of COVID, and so it was a really stressful time for everyone in health. And then I had to do a Zoom interview, and I think there was about 15 people, all, you know, chancellors of the year. Yeah. I was like, oh my God. And, you know, these are serious, serious heavy hitters. And then there was me, you know, in my lounge room thinking, I have never seen this many people on a screen. And then it was challenging, and it was about an hour, and they were really, really challenging me and picking me and seeing if I was up for it. So, and then I was awarded it, and a part of that was a mentor program that I found completely transformational. It was this incredible sort of guy who works in Hunter Health was mentoring and supporting me. And yeah, and then we started this clinic, and it got great, great, you know, results that we're over the moon with.
Excellent. Very good. And so that grant writing experience is how we've met. So you've jumped on, and you're part of the Maitland basketball community now. And
yep,
it's so wonderful to meet new people, and it's fun that you know, Trent's that guy that's helping out with grants, and oh, he's that guy that's volunteering his time and painting that room, and then Trent's the nurse of the year. What? I didn't even realise Trent was a nurse.
Yeah.
So it's funny how you learn about people through that. Because sometimes it's not important what people do in their life, but how they impact you or how you meet them is totally different to who they are. And so that's been a fun journey to go, oh, wow, I didn't realise that this great guy that's been helping our club with generating money for grants has this amazing career. And someone working in employment, you'd think that that's how I would think, but we just don't. You're just a great human that's helping, and we meet. So it's fun to
look at people differently sometimes.
I agree. And I think that's probably something that's really has driven me, is that community. And I remember, you know, playing cricket for a wonderful club, Beresfield Cricket Club, and, you know, and I played junior basketball at Maitland and was just treated beautifully. And, you know, and with my cricket, you know, I'd done a lot of coaching and things like that. And always it was about community, you know. It was always, and I've had, you know, probably opportunities to move interstate in particular and have a lot of opportunities, but I couldn't in my heart leave Maitland, because the story of my little boys playing basketball was, you know, I'm obsessively watching, you know, clips of Larry Bird and they sort of started watching them with me, and I've got, you know, all these sporting leadership books at home, and it's a real nerdy pastime of mine. And then I took them up to the stadium, and, you know, as usual, you're welcomed. And they said, come on, just try it. And literally from the first time they bounced the ball, they were hooked. And, you know, I wasn't terribly involved. I just loved to go and watch. And then I just thought, geez, this is just such a wonderful club. It's a wonderful community club. And then the kindness that people show in that club, I find wonderful. And then I thought, you know what, I can help here. I can help in this little way. And that's been the genesis. It's just been so rewarding.
And it's an amazing thing that some people don't think about. You know, like, I was on the Maitland football executive for a number of years and have no kids involved. I just love football, soccer.
Yep.
And I was kind of like the guy that went, why do we do things like that? I was just asking questions at an executive level.
That's me.
Yeah, and most people at Maitland football probably never knew me, saw me. I was just in the background. I was that guy. I do the they know I'm confident with the microphone, so I used to do the emceeing gigs for presentation nights and stuff. And that's probably the extent where most people would see me, apart from the executive. And you're in a similar boat, that it's such an important role that you're playing for the club, but it's not bouncing a ball. It's not blowing a whistle. It's not score bench officiating. It's not a scene role.
No. And that suits me, Brett. I think as the card carrying introvert.
Yeah, it does. But it's also so needed. It's something that every little club would love a Trent to help them generate grant funding to repaint a room or do what's necessary around the place. And so those things are critical. So it's something that if anyone takes out of this that their kids are playing gymnastics or tennis and they don't have a tennis bone in their body, but they think, oh, how can I help?
Yep.
Yeah, jump in and volunteer.
And I think that's the great thing, you know, when you have that community, when there's kindness and there's a focus on lifting everyone up, everyone wins. And it's such a small little skill that's quite nerdy and dorky, which is me to a T, but to be able to help in that way is wonderful, and seeing the positive things happening, it's so rewarding. Yeah.
Awesome. Let's get to your paid work. So, nurse of the year, obviously.
Yeah.
When you were younger, was that there a drive to be a nurse? Was that when you're at school, were you, hey, I'm going to be a nurse, or what did young Trent want to be?
Young Trent had visions of being, dabbling in just being an international cricketer, and then just on the side, just playing some recreational basketball, and then morphing into you know, coaching both of them. So you know, it was I think I did my first coaching course when I was 15, and was an assistant coach for the cricket team. And under, you know, I always think that teachers just make these incredible coaches, and a mate of mine, Dave, asked me to come and help him coach, and I learned so much from that. Then did, you know, level one and level two coaching, and then took over my own team and loved it, and then went to all these coaching courses, and I just fell in love with it. And
this is cricket.
Yeah, cricket, absolutely. Yeah, and then I did since done of soccer and basketball, but you know, I remember going to a course once, and there was Bob Simpson. So I was front row centre, and he just sort of ambled in, and they got a PowerPoint presentation all ready for him, and he said, I don't need that. And so he just spoke for an hour and a half on coaching and development and the importance of passion, And he just held every single person in the palm of his hand for an hour and a half.
Hmm.
And it was just this masterclass, you know. And, you know, I've since read love books and all that sort of stuff. And I'm sort of addicted to all of that sort of thing. And but then, you know, in terms of jobs, I had my heart set on either being a detective or a history or English teacher.
So they are way different to being a nurse.
They are so different. And, you know, so I actually come from a long line of nurses,
yep.
My grandmother and aunties, and I was at a family barbecue. And I think I was sitting around, and when you're 15 or 16 year old bloke, you've got the mental age of about 5 year old guy, and we don't come good to her about 30, I think, guys. And so
I'm
still
no good.
I'm still got a massive maturity problem. And I was sitting in there, and they said, "What are you going to do when you leave school, Trent?" I was like, "I'll just keep playing cricket."
This is so stereotypical, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Family barbecue. What are you going to do?
Yeah, yeah. It was like, "What are you going to do with yourself, young man?" Yeah. And I couldn't. You know, go, "Oh, I don't know." And they said, "You know, Trent, you'd be a great nurse."
Yeah.
And I'm like, "Oh, okay. What a bloke being a nurse. Like, what?" And then, you know, this was up in Curry, and, you know, some big, tough, miney, burly blokes. They went, "You can't be a male nurse, mate." And I said, "Well, I can't be a female one, I don't think so." And then my dad sort of drove me home, and as a background, you know, my dad, who's no longer with us, is perhaps the most kind, gentle, beautiful person. You know, he was innately kind, you know, innately understated, and just loved his kids. You know, I never saw my dad get out of bed. He was working 7 days a week, yeah. And he was just this, you know, this great, great fella. And he said, what are you going to do?" And I said, "Well, I don't know." Then he goes, "Well, you need to start thinking." "Yes, I actually think you'd be a good nurse. I think you'd enjoy it." "Well, oh, yeah, well, whatever."
So going back to that comment, is a nurse kind of like a detective, that they're searching for answers? And
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. I couldn't agree more. They're showing responsibility. They're investigating things. They're setting things up. They're looking at things. They're talking to people. They're finding out what's going on. Yeah, I agree. I never thought of that. That's
yeah,
really good.
Like a bit of a... Yeah, finding solutions to problems, and
yeah.
It may not be a murder, but...
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I
drug bust, but...
I couldn't agree more. I never thought of it. It's true. It's so true.
Hmm.
And then he sort of said, "You know, you need to start thinking about things." And he said, "I'll tell you, you know, I actually think you're getting a bit lazy, Trent."
Yeah, right.
"You're not... You're pretty bright, and you're just playing sport, and I think you're going to end up not having a good job, and now's the time that you need to start aiming up." And I thought, and you know, Dad was so kind, he's so gentle, you know.
Yeah,
I never heard
the first time he'd heard.
Yeah,
that.
And
yeah.
I was like, and it hit me, and I thought, you know what? And a couple of days later, I said, "Dad, I think I might give nursing a go." So unbeknownst to me, he'd actually driven down to the School of Nursing at Newcastle, and he bumped into the head of school, literally bumped in, and they said, "Can we help you?" You know, this sort of guy wandering around looking lost. And he said, "Look, my son, he's in year 12 and he thinks he wants to be a nurse." And she said, "Well, I'm basically the boss. Come in." And I think right at that point, she took so much pity on this poor guy who's got this, you know, fool of a son who can't really help. And so she kindly got all the paperwork sent to him, everything that he needed to do. And then put him in touch with someone that could really help him, taught him about nursing and said, "This is what it is. This is how great it is." And he said, "You know, I had this conversation today." And I'm like,
"That's pretty amazing."
He was an amazing man, Craig. Yeah.
Not last year or the year before. We're talking a couple of decades ago.
Yeah, we're talking 20 years ago. And
the man decided to go down to a school of nursing, which probably back in those days would have been a female-dominated thing.
Absolutely.
More than anything. He's just knocked on a door to get you information.
Yep, he did. And so then he said, "What do you think?" And I said, "Dad, you know, I thought, oh, I'll do my homework. I'll watch All Saints and, you know, I'll watch DR. So I'm pretty up to date with what's going on." And then, so I sort of, and then I filled in the paperwork, and unbeknownst to me, it actually forged my signature. And I started aiming up at school. And because I was just, I was so interested in sport. Yeah. I just loved it. You know, I loved it. And then I started, and then I managed to get the marks, and the rest is history, you know. And I think, you know, Dad was so kind. He was such a gentle person. But right then, I think, you know, I think I realized the importance of mentorship. And he knew that he had to go straight in here and do something because I could have gone another way.
What was his job?
So my dad worked two jobs basically for his whole working life. So he was a sales rep for building supplies. Mm-hmm. And then he also did after hours work Friday and Saturday and sometimes Sunday night. On the taxis, you know, ringing, people would ring and book the taxi.
Yep.
And so he would do that. And I never saw him tired. I never saw him complain. And I look back now as a dad and I think, how did he do this?
Yeah.
How did he, this man
that,
do this?
You think, again, I'm stereotyping, but there'd be a lot of men and women that would want their child to follow in their footsteps, so to speak. So it might be pushing them towards a certain sector.
Yep.
Whereas he's gone, oh, there's these people that have said that you'd be a great nurse, and I kind of look at it, and he's gone and got that information. And it's totally foreign to him, yet he's supporting you in that endeavor. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was, and I still look back at that moment. And the university, the School of Nursing, actually asked me 3 or 4 times a year to come back and give talks on leadership and the importance of mentorship. And I talk about these 3 big moments in my life, and that's probably the biggest one that. He knew that I needed mentoring. He knew that he needed to inject himself in his usual soft, gentle way. And you know, when I was sitting on that leather lounge in Parliament House, I just thought, how amazing would it be for Dad to sit here and see this, you know, this act of just kindness, you know, and this love of his child. And how great would it be him, you know, to see me walking across the stage and getting that award. And I've always sort of, you know, tried to do kindness, mentorship and building other people up because everyone wins. People get transformed from it.
Again, the language that you've been using there around leadership and mentorship and being asked to go back to the university and talk to that about nurses, that's not what we think about when we talk about or think about a nurse. Like, you know, if I'm sitting here and people are listening to this podcast, they're thinking about nurses, you know, changing a catheter or injecting someone with some painkillers or doing whatever the doctor wants them to do. I love it, though, that there is within any sector, there's a need for management, for leadership, for mentoring, for coaching, and that's what you've been focusing on there. So step me back through, though, when you first finished your degree and you worked in a hospital or in a clinic. Step me through your first nursing experience.
So I was so fortunate enough to work at a nursing home when I was paying my way through uni.
Yeah, okay.
And nursing home workers are a special, incredible breed. They are just amazing people. And I, as an 18-year-old guy, I had a lot to learn about humanity. Mm. And I had to... Okay. Yeah, and these wonderful women beat it into me. You know, if one of their residents, you know, I'm an 18-year-old guy, I can't do women's hair.
Yeah.
If any of their residents wasn't looking completely, you know, beautiful, then you would hear about it. And so I learned so much from that, incredibly. And I was literally doing, you know, the most meaning, you know, work that would help people maintain their humanity, you know, and what that experience was invaluable. It was totally invaluable because the love that these people had for their residents was just indescribable. So you would be made sure that everything was up to standard. And, you know, I finished uni and then I remember my first day ever as a registered nurse. It was at Gosford Hospital.
Yep.
And I walked in and I was so nervous. Mm. I have never been more nervous. You know, I've given talks to big, you know, overseas and things. I've never been more nervous than that time. And I must have looked 10 times more nervous than I felt because this wonderful, wonderful nurse called Cookie, he'd been on that ward forever and he knew the ins and outs of everything.
So what ward did you start on?
I started on a urology ward.
Okay.
And he walked in and he called everyone lad. And he goes, what's your name, lad? And I'm like, Trent. And he said, So he stopped handover, you know, every shift you have a handover. And this was in the morning. And he said, "Everyone, this is Trent. It's his first day ever as a nurse." And I thought, "Oh, no." And he goes, I thought, "Oh, no, what's he going to say?" And he goes, "Let's all love and support him.
Yeah, let's look after him.
Let's look after him and make sure he has the best first day ever." And I thought, how great's that? And then I got a clap. And then,
is the nursing fraternity like that across the board?
Yeah, look, mostly, yeah. I think that, you know, there's, you know, like every industry, there's elements that it's not, you know, probably needs to be improved. But amongst your colleagues, there's just beautiful camaraderie.
So you know what that was? That was your baggy cap, baggy green moment.
Yes, it was. That's what it was.
Cookie
was
the captain.
Cookie
and
he was
just introducing you to the team, and you're getting your baggy green.
That is so true.
You're about to walk out on the pitch.
Yeah, and do you know what? When I was walking out to bat to face my first over, he put his arm around me and he said, "Lad, just make sure the first thing they see is your smile and you'll be fine."
Hmm.
And I tell all of the nursing students that I look after to do that. And it was the greatest thing ever. And, you know, a couple of months later, I was working in intensive care. And this guy who was, you know, 6'4", big burly guy, his name was John. And I was on intensive care as a new grad nurse, which is frightening.
Mm.
And he came up to me and he goes, "I'm your mentor." I said, "Oh, great. You know, I'm training." He goes, "So your job, if you want my respect, if you want me to mentor you, is I want you to have 3 or 4 questions at the end of each shift, and I'll spend that amount of time with you, however long, but I want you to engage in your learning."
Yep.
"And we will make you a great nurse at the end of this." And true to his word, he did. And he made me work so hard. He expected it, but it was the most valuable thing for me. And at the end of my rotation, he said, "I just want to let you know I grilled you really hard, but you're going to have a great career, and I'm so happy that I was your mentor." And I think that was just, you know, again, he didn't have to do it.
Do you think that nursing in particular, like this mentorship, that learning through people is critical? That, you know, it's not one of those jobs where you can just read about the theory and then do it.
Yep.
You need to be shown and ask questions and... do you think that's a critical part of your?
It is. I love the combination, you know, and I think probably our uni system has got it pretty right, you know, getting that academic rigor behind you, because to call yourself a professional, you've got to have that. And so I think basically we do get it right so much, and I think that's when I talk about, you know, leadership. I always say find a mentor.
Mm.
You know, you might have a couple, and I said, they're so secure that they just love to bring people up.
Yep.
They love to see people succeed. They've got no lines in it, but they just love to see it. And they're so secure. They want to build people up. And I think that's been such a key for me, having these people that have come into my life. At, you know, I love the saying, when the student is ready, the master emerges. And I love that. I think you've got to be in that place to go, you know what, I actually need some help. And fast forward a couple of years later, I had this awful moment as a nurse. And it was awful. You know, I potentially nearly caused a patient harm, which was dreadful. And I sat down.
That's one of the, what's the word? That's one of the tough parts of your job. Like, if I make a mistake, then it might be a spelling error, or it might mean that I don't put the right candidate forward and someone misses out on a job or whatever it might be. If you make a mistake, it could be catastrophic.
Yeah, and look, this was nearly, and through the intervention of someone, and it was avoided, and the patient, you know, was fine and didn't have an issue with it. But I remember feeling so awful. And I sat down in this control room, because it was a theatre environment. I had tears in my eyes because it was such a stupid thing. There's a lot of causes that contributed to it. But I sat down, and it was like a scene of a movie that everyone just walked away. They're like, "We don't want to be near that guy."
Yeah.
And then, you know, the person in charge at the moment said, "You need to go out into the other area. You're not going to be allowed in here for a couple of days, etc." And it was a remarkable guy who was the head of our department, walks over and he says, "What's wrong with you?" I said, "I did this." He goes, "Oh, I've done that 10 times. other people have done it a lot of times.
Mm.
So no use feeling sorry for yourself.
Yeah, move on.
You're coming in to me with the next case. So he literally put his arm around me, held my hand while I was doing this procedure with him, and gave me the best mentorship and the best support. And I said, thank you for that. Thank you. And he said, no, we're not done yet. Now you need to assure me that we're all going to learn from this, not just you. I want you to give a presentation next week about how, what went wrong, how you did it, what we can do better, and we're going to sit around and do it as a group.
What was that experience like?
Presenting my mistake?
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting because I learned a lot from it, and to be in front of your colleagues with that level of vulnerability.
But it's like even reframing it from mistake to learn experience. It's straight powerful.
Straight away. And then he said to me, so when you finish that, what, are you just going to give up teaching, are you? And I said, well, no. And he said, well, you can do something really special with it. And he said, we just want you to know you got a lot of talent. We believe in you. You're going to do great things here. And then so I did a little course in how to look a bit of a risk management for health. And then I was asked to do this role a day or two a week and look at why things go wrong, how we can improve engaging with people, etc. And fast forward 15 years ago, the title of my PhD was A Nursing-Led Review of Adverse Events.
Yeah, right.
So
that event led to something massive for you.
Yeah, completely changed my life. And if he didn't pick that opportunity to say, you know what, I'm going to lead here, I could have left. You know, I couldn't have had this career.
Yeah.
And he said, you know what, I'm going to lead here. And it changed my life. And everything good that's happened to me has happened because of that.
To that point. Yeah, right. Because, again, the stereotypical nurse that we think about, that's not what you're talking about here.
No.
Step me through. So, obviously, when you do your degree, you come out as a nurse.
Yep.
You have to do your, what was the word you used before?
My new graduate year.
That's right. And you do the rounds or the, you go and see all the different areas.
Yep.
Where did you transition into what you're doing now? You just talked about that evolution of that thesis.
Yep.
But going from being nurse to mentor, teacher, risk manager.
Yeah.
How does that happen in the nursing sphere?
Well, I worked for 18 months at Maitland Hospital, and then I thought, you know, I had, you know, when I finished my year at Gosford, I thought I have to come home to Maitland. I have to come home. And I got a job there at Maitland Hospital, which is just a wonderful opportunity. And I thought I probably need to spread my wings and go to a really large teaching hospital. So I had this interview, and they said, you know what, Trent, we'd like you to work in cardiac. And that's how I got started.
Had you thought about cardiac?
Nope.
Cardiology?
No. I worked at Maitland. I had a little bit of an interest, and they said, how would you feel about it? I said, I've got no experience. And they said, we want to teach you. You know, your references said that you're really sort of, you know, really interested and hardworking. So how would you feel? Great. And, you know, I worked on the coronary care unit and in the cath lab and did these things. And then, so when I applied 2 years in a row to get my graduate certificate in cardiology and got knocked back both times.
Yeah, okay.
Because other people were better prepared.
Yeah.
They were better nurses and they were better. And I had a couple of years and I did it again. And I was managed to get funding to get in. And then the job that I was describing before happened. And then when I finished my PhD.
So send me through that. Finishing a PhD is not a one-line sentence. It's quite a journey.
Oh, it is.
Step me through how you got into the PhD program and give us a little picture of that journey itself.
Yeah, so
why you chose what you chose to do as your thesis.
Yeah, again, it was, you know, through kindness and mentorship of others. And I'd started up all of these little innovative things that I didn't know were innovative. They were just things that I did. And looking at why things happen, why things go wrong. And to do that properly, to make good decisions, you need good evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I sort of tried to get. And we had the arrival of a professor of cardiology, and Just a great, great guy, really great guy. And he watched me for a couple of months, and you know, I was sort of doing a master's, but wasn't really doing too well at that. And he said, basically, you know, why aren't you doing a PhD? And I was, you know, I thought, well, I'm just a guy from Maitland. I can't do a PhD. I'm like, I don't think I could even spell that. And he said to me, why not? Sorry. And I said, well, he goes, you can do it. It's just, you just put one foot in front of the other. And, you know, my wife was actually doing one at the time, and she got some great advice. And they said, this is no different to a bricklayer doing their apprenticeship, to a builder doing their apprenticeship. This is just an apprenticeship in research. And it was that way when we looked at it like that. And I think if I wasn't passionate about the area, it would probably
make it hard, wouldn't it?
It would be like being a prison, I think. It was horrible. It would be horrible, and it was hard time wise because my wife was just finishing hers.
Yep.
So
you'd seen that. Did that help you make the decision that I can do this?
I guess not really. I think I saw, you know, my wife is just so incredibly capable and bright and all those, you know, bubbly and fantastic. You know, she's so smart, but so hardworking. And she sort of, yeah, you can do this. You know, you can do it. And I think, you know, having, you know, we'd had one child, and I thought, you know, how do I do this? And I was working
the juggle,
and every single person does it. Every single person, and certainly no different. But
no, everyone doesn't do a PhD.
Yeah, it was, and I guess looking back now, I thought, why did I do that? But I was working full time, and my role was I did on call as well. So you get called in at, you know, if someone had a heart attack at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I do that two or three times a week. Plus, I did PhD, plus a couple of kids. And looking back now, I don't know how I did it. It was through other people supporting me, unrelenting support, and hang in there, mate. Things would be okay. And suddenly I finished it, you know. And
so how long did it take?
I took, when Dad passed away, I took some time off. I think I probably took 6 months off, or maybe a little bit longer. And I think that was probably a great lesson, because I was struggling a bit. And someone who I really, really look up to said, you know, Trent, sometimes life's more important than p-values. Mm. So p-values is, you know, a research sort of tool that we use. And I thought, that's so true. And I took some time off, and again, like, just realizing that you need to take time out, that family's more important, that you need to have that time to recharge.
Yep.
I came back to it, I think, with a vengeance. And, you know, it was the greatest thing. I was able to do it. I did it with a lot of passion. And yeah, so it probably took 4 years,
okay,
Craig, to be honest. It might have been a little bit longer with
the dedication.
It was. And again, you've got to do the work, but, you know, there was lots of people in your corner. And if I didn't have all these people in my corner, it would be infinitely more hard. And I remember writing it up and then, you know, sending it off. You know, it's not, you know, this grand process of, you know, pipes and bagpipes playing. Yep. When you submit it, you literally just download it, and then you're like, that was what that was all about. And, you know, and then 2 days later, I won a small grant through, again, you know, the university, who do such great support of people. And I got a grant to travel overseas and see all these big American hospitals, which was mind-blowing. And I flew out 2 days after I submitted my PhD.
Yeah, wow.
And so that was like a couple of months of an hour's sleep and doing that sort of thing. And then you know, flying over to America. And it was tough. And looking back now, it was tough. But again, when I sort of felt towards the end, I owe it to so many people to keep going, because all these people that have, you know, invested in me, they've done it. And
did the research and your PhD open more doors for your career?
Absolutely and totally.
So it's not only just an investment in what you're researching, but it's the investment in Trent.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of my supervisors, who's just lovely, said to me, you don't know where this is going to take you, and just enjoy that journey. You don't know where it's going to take you, and that's okay. And then, you know, I went, got back to America, had an amazing time there, and still keep in contact with so many of these world leaders that are just, they're just people. And they are such cool people who have done a lot, but they just, you know, hey, how you doing, you know, and, you know, I had to say g'day about 500 times, but, you know, that, but they were just so giving and like, come and see, this is how, this is the best in the world, and this is how we do it, and this is how this is done. And you're like, wow. And, you know, I came back and...
Did you teach them anything? Did you go, maybe we do it better?
You know what, I came, it's interesting you say that, Craig. I came over, come home, I thought, we do it great. Yeah. I'm so proud of where we work. I'm so proud of Newcastle. I'm so proud of the training that our nurses get. I'm so proud of everything, you know. And you know, they do great well, and that they really do. And they are such fan that the support I got over in America was just amazing, you know. And I did a grant writing workshop over there, and I guess it's just as a backstory. The reason I went over to Johns Hopkins was there is an amazing nurse, and she's probably the Michael Jordan of nursing, Craig. Yeah. Her name is Trish Davidson, and she's the vice chancellor now of the University of Wollongong.
Yeah, okay.
And so she was over at Johns Hopkins when I went over there, and she had this room. Her office was amazing, and she's just the most kind, generous person. She sat down, how can we help you move forward?
Yeah.
How can we help you, Trent? Yep. So, you know, it was at the Johns Hopkins, and I was up there giving a talk in the Johns Hopkins hospital. Like, who does that, you know? And it was, again, she said, how can we help? Let's do this and let's do this. And, you know, I still, you know, keep in contact with her. And that was, you know, phenomenal.
Phenomenal, isn't it?
Oh, it is, and they're just, and they're so senior. Like, she was the dean of Johns Hopkins, so, you know, she would be she said collaborate widely, mentor widely, you know, and all these great things. Lead with kindness, lead with empathy, and you know, I came home from that going, oh my God, this is just, this doesn't get any better. And
it gave you good energy.
Oh, I did, yeah, yeah. And, you know, I saw my first NBA game, and, you know, I saw Steph Curry and KD shooting the warm-up, and I was, nice. I had a little fangirl moment. But it was just, you come away going totally energized, yeah. You know, and you come back, and a couple of months later, you know, Aaron sat me down and said, hey, I said, why me? And he, why do you want me to come away? And he said, you know what, I just want a good person who we can work with. And that was it, you know. And he's been remarkable, you know. He got asked to write a journal article for the Lancet. Oh, we want your help with it. You know, he could have not done
that himself.
Yeah, and that's what this leadership journey and these people that just go, nah, how can we just help everyone else? It's remarkable.
And so what's the study that you're doing now, or what are you... What's the work that you're doing now?
So right at the moment, my fellowship just finished. So we've secured funding to make, I guess, what I started, or what we as a team started, to be rolled out to other hospitals. And so when I, you know, return to work, so I'm, you know, having some leave at the moment, when I return to work, we'll be doing with that, and I'll be continuing doing some education and some mentoring, and, you know, trying to improve systems and, yeah, and I guess go from there. I think what this is, you know, all of this stuff, you know, you've gone from PhD and then you start this fellowship, you're writing a grants, and then through this process I've written other grants that have got more funding to help other people do things, and you think, you know, it's phenomenal, you know, you've started all of these things that have just come from people just going, let's, you know,
build him up.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I think that's the, I guess, what I always say to people, find a mentor, you know, find a mentor and you know, believe what you can do. And if on my first day of uni, you know, first week, sorry, we did an we got given an essay on the deontological and utilitarian views of ethics. And I was an 18-year-old guy. I was like, what? I don't even know what that means, you know? And I thought, maybe nursing's not for me, you know? And this is not for me. And one of my, you know, great, great friends, he said, no, this is not what it is. This is just a test.
Yeah.
To you know, and so then he took me out to palliative. He did volunteer work for palliative care. So he took me out and saw these patients and we went, took me out for dinner with all these great nurses and said, this is what it's about. Yeah. And I thought, wow, you know, this is what it was. And
you're right, it was a test to see who wanted to do it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I still remember my first week at uni and it was look to your left, look to your right, only one of you will be here at the end. That was literally what the lecturer said. And it's just a bit of a Hunger Games, like, you know, at the start to say, who really wants to be here? Let's throw them some tests.
Absolutely.
And survive, see who survives. So, yeah, it's an interesting concept.
I think that it was... I thought, oh my God, you know, like this. And but then it was, I think it was just such an important step. It was an important step for me. And then you're sort of working hard, doing shift work at the nursing home and then doing uni and then, you know, having some sort of a semblance of a life. And then, you know, I then going down to do a new grad at Gosford, and that was just amazing. And then going to Maitland and... you know, Maitland was just fantastic. You know, that's where I met my wife. And then went down to John Hunter and have sort of done lots of great little things. And I wish it was, you know, you're brilliant or anything, but you're not. You just take these opportunities when it's given to you. And, yeah.
So you've had a really great journey.
Yep.
I'm going to ask you one question. It's our only question.
Yep.
So we've got a time machine on our podcast.
Yep.
If we could rewind the clock to... 20-year-old Trent, given what you know today, what advice would you give him?
I would say to believe in yourself, know that it too shall pass, surround yourself with really good people who believe in you. I think find someone, you know, who, you know, you love to bits to share that journey with, because that's just the greatest thing in the world. And I think don't take everything seriously. You know, life should not.
That's good advice.
Life should not be. And I think, you know, when you look after people, you know, nursing, you look after people on their first day of their life and their last day of their life.
True.
You look after people at the best day of their life or their worst day.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things that I've really appreciated is just be nice, enjoy it. And so many good things will come from that. I've really found that. So, and I'd probably say, you know, you probably should have worked a little bit harder at school or stop watching so much sport. You slack out.
No. You've got to enjoy it.
Yeah. No. And I think that was, you know, all of this stuff that's happened, both good and bad, lead you to this point.
That's right. Good stuff. Well, thanks so much for being on our podcast, Trent. Congratulations again on the award and
thanks.
All the best.
It's been an honour, Craig. It really has.
Cheers, mate. A very special thank you to Trent Williams today, our guest on the Hunter Recruitment Group Career Conversations podcast. And as he mentioned in the chat, that he's quite an introverted guy. And so I really appreciate him taking himself out of his comfort zone and sharing this time with us today to just talk about his career as a nurse, but also winning an amazing award and getting the recognition as 2023 New South Wales Nurse of the Year. If you enjoyed that podcast, there is a back catalogue on our website. Go and listen to some amazing individuals talk about their career arcs and why they do what they do. And if you enjoyed these podcasts, please, we encourage you to jump on Apple Podcasts, give us a rating, and that will mean that more people get to enjoy these career conversations. So until next time, I am your host, Craig McGregor. This podcast is brought to you by Hunter Recruitment Group, and thanks so much for listening.